Good evening, everyone. I was thinking about current events, let's say. Which is an interesting expression in English that we have for the news or whatever's happening in the world. And it's current meaning now, and events meaning, things that are happening. And yet it's an interesting kind of play on words because current, also is the flow. It's we say a stream's current, a river's flow is the current. And current events are actually, a marvelous teaching in impermanence, interdependence, samsara, karma. The three poisons, separation, oneness, the precepts, enlightenment, endarkenment. These current events are just a fabulous teaching. And not only from the point of view of David Lynch of the Theater of the Absurd, also from the point of view of our practice of, always moving, always changing, everything, everywhere, all at once. That was a great title of a film. And I tend to approach current events in that way more and more. Part of this comes from my training as a journalist, working almost 40 years as a journalist for a daily newspaper is a great practice in current events because every day it's something new. Even throughout the day it changes. In the old days when I started, we used to have machines where the dispatches from the wire services, the news services would come in on this, a machine, and they would actually print out. And according to how urgent it was, there would be different number of bells. So if it was really urgent, we'd hear this ding, 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 ding. And the same story would be updated many times during the day. And this is such a fabulous practice of impermanence. It's endless, it's constantly changing. So, what does that mean in terms of our practice? And why do I say that this is a great practice, actually? Being with just what is, whether it's inside yourself, whether it's in your household, whether it's in your community, whether it's in the world at large. The poet Gary Snyder wrote to Allen Ginsberg after he had had a baby. His wife had had a baby, and Snyder became a father for the first time. He wrote to him, "Fatherhood is like having a Zen master in the house at all times," which I can relate to, having raised two children. And yet, we could say, living my life, if I'm really present, if I'm really taking daily life as practice, there's a Zen master in the house at all times. Because daily life is a Zen master. It keeps you here and now on your toes. When I say daily life, that of course means, before I came here, I wanted to get up and be away from my computer where I spend so much time, and so I washed a frying pan that had been, resistant all afternoon since lunch. I went down in my laundry room and folded clothing that had been hanging there for 2 days, was dry. I treated the cat who had one of the cats who had has some kind of skin affliction. I just attended to daily life, just what needed to be done. And it was so fulfilling. At the same time, how does that apply to we can you could all are probably thinking, well, yeah, that's easy, right? Well, it's not so easy treating a cat who has a skin infection, believe me. Cats don't like medicine. But today we went to the vet and it took a long time to get her to take the pill, the cat, even with the vet. But you know, what does that mean for the rest of life? That kind of stuff is relatively easy. Gary Snyder also said, I was recently reading Gary Snyder, so I have him on my mind, but he said, you know, something like life in the wild is not just eating berries in the sunlight. And that can be for us too, you know. Life is not, we have this expression in English, a bowl of cherries. We would like it to be, right? We would like everything, the current to be just flowing smoothly, tranquilly, and we could just listening to the bubbling waters of the stream going by, right? Well, if they're bubbling, the waters, then there's something going on there, right? There's rocks, there's stuff. The current is meeting the unevenness of the surface and making bubbling sounds. We tend to think the bubbling current of the flowing waters is nice. We don't think a lot of the other sounds of the world are nice. So how can I say that current events is a marvelous teaching? If we look at it from, let's say from the way that we treat some of our Zen practice as koan. So we use koans to really, really question what life is, what the situation is, what does it mean? What is it? You know, really, not even so much what does it mean, but what is it? And so I often give this example that for me, this is an example of treating current events as a koan, right? For me, this became really present in 2016 when in Europe we were experiencing this enormous, what we called the refugee crisis. And because of current events in Syria, Afghanistan, Somalia, many other places, people were fleeing those countries and seeking refuge in Europe. And it was a huge crisis because nobody in Europe wanted them. And so there was this push and shove. The crush of migrants desperate to flee their dire situations. Many were persecuted, terrorism, poverty, women, abuse of women, you know, Islamic fundamentalism, all kinds of logical reasons why they were fleeing their homes, at great risk. Even just, I think it was yesterday or today, a boat off of Lampedusa, the Italian island, sunk. And it had 36 or 56 people on board, I think, and not many have been found. So it's still going on. People taking great risk to flee their homes, to leave everything they've ever known behind, and risking their lives to come somewhere else. And then people to the place where they come, instead of giving them haven, welcoming them, helping them, push them away. So this made no sense to me at this time. From the logical point of view, I understood the cause of it. I understood the wars, the terrorism, the Islamic fundamentalism, the American imperialism that had, and before that, the Russians in Afghanistan, and you know, it all made sense logically from a geopolitical point of view. I could understand that. However, from, and that's okay, so that's from the literal point of view, like we look at precepts from the three points of views. However, from the intrinsic point of view, the point of view of oneness, of wholeness, it made no sense that we are one body, we are one, and we would reject aspects of ourselves, that we would persecute aspects of ourselves. And when we needed help, we would push ourselves away. I mean, if I'm really pushing this to the extreme of oneness. And we wouldn't act from a compassionate point of view. So to in order to understand this, because this was a real question, already course it also corresponded to a moment where the newspaper I worked for was closed by the New York Times, and we were all without jobs, me and my colleagues. And one of my colleagues, while he was looking for a job, started volunteering at a center where that was in Paris that was welcoming refugees. And I thought, wow, that's it. I have to do a plunge. You know, I have to put into practice my teachings that I learned with Bernie Glassman, but also my teaching that I had learned through with my own teacher through Cohen practice of plunging into the situation. That's what we have to do with koans. You know, we say, take the koan on, breathe it in, take it in, be it. Every moment of your day, bring it into your life. What is it? What is it? What is it? And with Bernie Glassman's plunges, you know, we plunge into the street living as a homeless person. We plunge into Auschwitz. We plunge into whatever it is. So I decided to do it. And I didn't. So I started right where I was. Okay, I didn't have to go to Lampedusa. I didn't have to go to Greece. I didn't have to go to Libya. I didn't have to go to Afghanistan, Somalia, Syria, to understand it, to plunge into it. I just had to go like a 20-minute ride on the tramway from where I live, which is, I used the resources I had at hand, okay? So at hand, I had this center that someone told me about and offered to introduce me to the person running the volunteers and, you know, be my kind of sponsor for this. I had time. It was easy to get to. So I did it. And I just plunged into it, not knowing what I would find. The only thing I could really do was whatever they asked me to do. So sometimes I would, it was a center where some people could stay and live for 5 or 6 days while their papers were being processed. Others could come in just for the day and have coffee, tea, warmth. It was winter in Paris. They could charge their phones. They could use the toilets. They could wash. They could just hang out, be with each other instead of in the street. Sometimes I would be with them doing that. Sometimes I would bring them, the people who had just arrived, to have their papers looked at. Sometimes I would help in the kitchens. Most of the time I did laundry. I did their laundry. They could bring their laundry. The ones who were living there for 5 days could bring their laundry, everything they owned, which was usually fit in a backpack. And we washed and dried it for them. Most of the time, that's what I did. And that also was a fabulous thing because it allowed me to speak with them. to have an interaction with them individually, to really experience who these, it was only men, there was another center for women and families somewhere else, but to really experience these guys. To my great surprise, I don't know what I thought, but most of them were young, under 30, under 40, say. Almost all of them had university degrees, some of them advanced university degrees. They had cell phones just like mine. I mean, that they had to. That was their lifeline, was their phones, actually. They dressed like and looked like my son. They had the same clothes, the same shoes, same haircuts, like my son, most of them spoke pretty good English. The ones who didn't speak English, some spoke a little French. Others didn't speak either. Surprisingly, many spoke German because they had come through German camps first. And in Germany, the first thing they did with the people who went through the camps was teach them German so that if they stayed, they could immediately function, I don't speak German, so that didn't help me very much. But I really got to experience them. I really was there with them, having a direct experience of who they were, and they could experience who I was. As soon as they found out that I was from America, they were like, "Why are you here then?" Their dream would be to go to America, and I had to try to convince them that no, your dream is not to go to America. Really, you don't want to go to America. So this was like winter of 2016, so we had a new president at that point, who was not so much different than he is today, but it was a shock, and I kept telling them, "You don't want to go to America." In any case, this is an example of what do we do in this facing the world events, We don't all have to go to a refugee center and work with refugees, What we can do is stay local and respond to the situations right on our doorstep. That's what I did, right? I just, oh, it's right here. Paris was inundated with immigrants, with migrants, and I didn't have to go anywhere else. Of course, I had to leave my neighborhood and go to another neighborhood, but even so, and from there, when I could really question the situation and then go to meet the situation, without my set ideas about what should be done, what shouldn't be done, who they were, I had to let go of my ideas about who they were before I could really meet them. And then I could have access to the whole thing. I could have the subjective view, then I could act with compassion. Whereas if I'm acting just from my fixed positions, I would be angry. I would be, I was angry about the situation. I was, condemning the people who weren't being nice to them. The armies who had invaded their countries and tried to impose some weird form of government that didn't apply to them. I came with an open heart and mind, and then I saw. So that's what we can do facing current events is start where you are. Take responsibility for your local community, As various people I've been listening to in the past months have said, the answer to what we're experiencing in the world, not only politically, but economically and environmentally and everything, is to be found in our local communities. Make friends with your neighbors, even if you don't agree politically. Know who they are. Be able to say hello to them. So that you can help each other, you know. I heard this speaker recently who lives in California somewhere, but kind of in an isolated place, and he said there's several roads that dead end in his community, his area, and there's 50 houses around. And they decided that because they all lived at these dead ends, that they would, you know, try to connect with one another. And they all have walkie-talkies. I don't know if that's exactly what they have now, but that's what they had initially. And they know who the old people are. They know who the people who are in the hospital and need help. If somebody's, you know, road is blocked, flooded by the creek or something, they know and they tell each other. And during COVID, they all helped each other. Once a year or twice a year, they get together and have like a big picnic. They don't all share the same political views, but they all know each other and they share the community. And if, you know, when they had to be evacuated for because of fire, they all helped each other get evacuated. If there's an electricity outage, they help each other. Somebody has a generator, or they help, they bring candles to who doesn't have them and whatever. And he was saying that, you know, if we get to a point where the resources become short, if for whatever reason we need to bond together, they have a, you know, tightly knitted community, even though they don't see each other that much, but they're all in touch with each other. And we can do that, you know? And that's what it means to be staying local and start where you are. Paying attention to the current of events, of course. But even, you know, the current of events is, we see only the surface of it. You know, we don't see what's happening underneath the surface of the soil. We're not paying attention to that. We're not paying attention to what's happening above the clouds. We're not really looking at the mountains. We're looking at us, humans, you know, and then we're caught up in all the dualities that humans engage in. And we don't see the oneness. We don't see the wholeness. We don't see the infinite interconnection of it all. We don't look at what do we need to learn here? What do we need to listen? What can we listen to and deepen here in this situation? I was thinking of this koan, Joshu's Stone Bridge. It's in several collections that we work with, and it's the great Master Joshu. So he lived in this place that he took his name from. I forget if it's a mountain or a monastery or something. And there was a famous stone bridge there. Apparently, in China at the time, there were only three stone bridges. And one of them was there at this place where Joshu's monastery or community was. And a monk arrived. The koan is that, you know, this monk arrives and he said, you know, I've heard about Joshu's stone bridge, but I just see this old log here. And Joshu says, you don't see the stone bridge or something like that. And the monk says, well, what is the stone bridge? And Joshu says, donkeys and horses can pass. So often we think it's like, you know, the monk is blind. The stone bridge is right there and he's looking at something else. Or we think that, you know, it's not really true that there's a stone bridge, that we should see that log bridge as a stone bridge or something. But can we see it like, you know, the monk is coming with his fixed ideas and maybe he's actually talking about Joshu? He's expecting this great reputed master. You know, we think of the great Joshu, even us, we do. And here's just this old rickety monk, you know, just this old guy, because he was really old, Joshua. He's probably his robes probably aren't great, He's living out here in the wild. And the monk's saying, what's this old log here, And Joshua is presenting, he's saying, well, so everything passes here. That's what makes it great. Everything passes here. He could have gone on and said, the stars, the moon, the wind, babies, old people, everybody, everything passes on this bridge. The monk is only seeing, like the phenomenal, the relative world of this horrible place. We're caught in Trump world, and we are caught in Trump world. But there's more to it than that. What does it mean we're caught in Trump world? We're only caught in Trump world if we don't see that donkeys and horses and stars and moons pass too, you know? What is that thing? There's something from Confucius, who's also a great, has great phrases. Something like heaven, what is it? Heaven remains silent, or heaven says nothing. And the seasons run their course, while the seasons run their course. So, Trump world goes on, and all this turmoil and all this stuff. And of course, people die. There's tragedy, there's oppression, there's war, there's discrimination, there's, of course, that's part of the seasons running their course. Meanwhile, heaven says nothing. It doesn't mean we should say nothing. It means that we need to see the whole picture, right? We need to see with wisdom, with wise heart and mind. To see the, to see the heaven saying nothing and the seasons passing equally, to see the harm and the goodness equally, which doesn't mean that they're not different. It means that we see harm clearly and we see goodness clearly. We see it all clearly. That's also what it is that donkeys and horses and the sun and the stars pass, the moon and the stars pass. It all passes there. It's different. The donkeys and the asses, the donkeys and the horses are different. Stone bridge, log bridge, different. And yet, everything passes. The seasons run their course. And if we can hold that, I mean, even just so that's why the, Trump world is actually an incredibly amazing teaching, because so what was it, 2 weeks ago? It's hard to remember, stuff is going so quickly. What was it when there was a thing in the Oval Office with Vance and Trump? I mean, I was on Sistine in the south of France at the time. So what, it was like 2.5 weeks ago, maybe 3 weeks ago? I don't know. Not even a month ago, right? And it was like, wow, it was like this whole volcano erupting, and all this shit, and na-na-na-na-na. And then Trump said this, and they did that, and then the Russians this, and all this stuff, and now here we are. It's like something completely different. The Trump is like this horrific manifestation of samsara, of impermanence, like to the XXL, as big as his suit and his tie. It's like unbelievable impermanence and delusion, like in full display. It's this wild display of it, It doesn't mean it doesn't have consequences. It has huge consequences. That's why I say, in this current events, we see karma. We see the consequences. We see how we get caught in it. We see the three poisons at work. We see that that is the cause of it, the three poisons. So then what do we do here then? So then we look, okay, well, how about me and the three poisons? How about me and karmic consequences? You know, how about me and my actions? So, you know, it helped me to go to the refugee center and see these people and have a real take real action that had meaning. Washing someone's clothes for them had real meaning. It certainly was not going to change the geopolitical situation. It wasn't going to stop the war and the terrorism. It was not going to change the policies of all these nations that were rejecting all of these people. Sometimes people were desperate, you know, that the European Union had made this what they called the Dublin rule, where, because they made the rule in Dublin, where the migrants, wherever they first arrived in the European Union, they were fingerprinted and registered, you know, where they were. Then they could travel wherever they wanted throughout Europe. However, it became so impossible for the countries where they first arrived, Italy and Turkey and Greece. They were just overrun. And then other countries that didn't want them, that they the Dublin Accord said they have to go, they can only seek asylum in the country where they arrived. Of course, Italy and Greece and Turkey didn't want this. And the migrants didn't want this because Italy and Turkey and Greece were going to send them, weren't going to accept them and send them back to their where they came from. So a lot of these guys burned their fingers so that they could no longer have their fingerprints identified. They were that desperate to stay. I learned this in this, you know, where I was in the center, you know. So I couldn't change that, but I could wash their clothes. I could talk to them, you know, I could make coffee and tea. I could bring them to their appointment. You know, so there was a sometimes we would take them to the hospital if they needed to go to the hospital. Something that had meaning. It had meaning for me, it had meaning for them. And we can do that in today's current events as well. I don't know what it is. It's another koan. It's a different koan, you know. Every koan's different. And each of us, as we know, depending on our situation, who we are, position, place, we will have a different response to a koan. The essence is the same, but how it presents itself is different. And we can be a bridge, you know, that horses, donkeys, we are a bridge, actually. That horses, donkeys, stars, moon, wind, rain passes. You know, and we can take inspiration from the local, the small, the intimate. Wake up to the, you know, the unity of life right here in, you know, I could say, welcome where you are, you know, where you are, be right where you are. Wake up there. There's nowhere else to wake up. And you know, take inspiration from Gary Snyder with, you know, fatherhood is like having a Zen master in your home at all times. Being human is like having here now is like having a Zen master in your home at all times. And not, you know, everybody is despairing. Everybody is, I mean, everybody I talk to in every context that I move in the world, you know, is despairing. But we don't have to give in to that. It's important to acknowledge it, but it's also important to question and say, well, what is this really happening? And to observe the three poisons in action. That's why Trump is a really good, I hate to say it, but you know, it's a really good example of the three poisons XXL delusion in all its splendor. And we can just, it's really good news that we can just stay put and act local. It's a big relief. We don't have to, you know, Bernie Glassman used to say that too. You know, people would say, oh yeah, well, I can't do anything now. I'm not clear enough. I'm not enlightened enough. I can't leave my job, so I can't go to a refugee camp in Greece, you know, or something. And he would say, you're never going to be enlightened enough. You're never going to be clear enough. You're never going to have an ideal opportunity. But you do have the ideal opportunity every moment right where you are. Just start where you are. The old person, you know, who lives in your building and needs help carrying the groceries up the steps or something, that is what you need to do. Or in your workplace, you know, someone who is discriminated against or something, you can truly see. Or come to your workplace from a place of wholeness rather than separation and respond to your colleagues without fixed ideas about who they are and what you want them to say and do. And then people will really notice. I mean, they will notice not in the way that we want them to notice, but it will make a difference in the relationships that in your workplace. The actor Peter Coyote, who an American actor who is involved in is a Zen practitioner, I heard him say that he when he got involved in the film business, people said, oh, you know, you're crazy. You know, that's a horrible business. People are mean. It's cutthroat. It's all about image, greed, money, you know, being famous, all of this. And he said, yeah, I know that. Okay. And so he said, well, what can I? He had lived in a Zen center for many years before he did this. And he said, okay, well, I will just do my practice within that context. So I will show up on time to work. I will know my role. I will pay as much attention to the person who brings me coffee as to the director of the set of the film. I will listen to the instructions. I will share my experience of how I feel the situation, the set is, the role I'm playing, and I will listen to what others share about how they see it. I will, when I don't need to be on the set, I won't get in the way. And he said at one time, after he had been on a set for a while, someone came to him and said, you know, Peter, you're really different. What's your secret? You know, what you have a different way about you here on the set. He said, Peter said, oh, really? What do you mean? And he said, well, you know, and he kind of named the things that Peter had said, you know, and he said, you're calm. You don't get angry with people. You're always on time and you know your lines. And, you know, I see how you are with the kid who, you know, brings you your coffee and, what's your secret, you know? And Peter said, okay, well, I'll tell you, you know, and he told him about his meditation practice. That's the kind of thing we can do, you know? Doesn't mean we have to tell people about our meditation practice, but we can bring our practice into our daily life without making it a big deal. Small, intimate, local. And it's not going to change, it's not going to end the war in Ukraine. It's certainly not going to save the suffering population of Gaza. However, it will change how you experience the world, and it will change how those who you are interacting with experience the world. And from that, we never know where those waves go. We never know. And we don't do it because we're trying to make the waves go far. We do it just because this is what it is right here now. So I've talked a lot, guys. I'm surprised. Maybe I'll stop now and let you say something instead of me occupying the whole microphone.
Good evening.
Lisa.
Hi. Sorry, I was off screen. I was had a doctor's appointment which ran late, and anyway, I'm here. And it's funny how what you said resonates with something my cousin in the US said. I spoke to her yesterday, and she's young, she's 30 something, and was trained as a lawyer, civil rights lawyer, and worked for some years in that, and defending young, mainly black men who were incarcerated when adolescent still, and who were, she was trying to help them, retrial. Anyway, she did, had a burnout, moved into a farm, and I'm still there. And so I asked her, are you, with what's happening, are you gonna use your skills and try to fight off or do something in that, what's happening in the US, and defend people and stuff? And she said, no, I think what I need to do, what we all need to do, is turn to our community. And she's on her farm with a dog, and growing her vegetables. Yeah, that's what she's gonna do. And I was like, oh. So it's just sharing that, and how, and it's funny that that's what you were just saying. Go back to, I mean, focus, not go back, but focus on what we have close by and supporting each other. So it's a beautiful, I don't know if it's a message, but anyway. Thank you.
Yeah, thank you for that. I'm not surprised. And I'm hearing that more and more from people. And someone I heard this recently, that some organization had done a, in terms of climate and environment, had tried to do a survey of organizations and groups and associations that were in vast different ways working on ecological and climate change issues, from really small local groups, you know, maybe people who have our bio farm, you know, organic farms, or you know, larger groups, whatever, throughout the world. And they had come up, they had stopped with their research when they got to 1 million groups. And when they tallied up the number of the people involved in those little groups, it was the biggest social movement in the world. All of those little groups together, who aren't even like working together, but they're all working on the same thing in their own ways, local ways. It's huge, you know? And this is an example of what, you know, what you're saying. If we, some people will work in big, you know, there are lawyers, fortunately, who are involved in defending those people and who are involved in contesting court rulings. And there are diplomats working on peace proposals. And that's one way of working. They're working on a community at a different level. But if we, if could we all work on our communities at the local level, what would that be like, you know? Joa.
Yeah, hi everyone. Good evening. Thank you, Roshi. What you'd said just makes me visualize Trump as one of these kind of mythical figures as we would have in Buddhism that you know that is the manifestation of ignorance or something, and just like. It just occurred to me sometimes we do have problems to say, what are these all these figures? You know, how could we relate to that? But this is like a perfect way to relate to it. You know, this is the figure of ignorance. I saw this week I saw a post on Instagram which was a puppet show with Putin and like the puppet show like they had with Kermit, and so it was like Putin and Trump and on a call. And it felt like it is like we're living in a it's a puppet show. It's like so absurd. Everything he says is just so absurd. And so yeah, by visualizing it, that may help not only at the same time to see it as a there's something to learn from, but also something because it's so big, it also tells us about something f about us, because I'm always amazed that he says all these ludicrous things, and at times people do clap, people do laugh in the room, people do find it amusing, interesting, or just you know on Fox News or whatever. And so it does tell also something, but to its extreme, with a kind of in an extreme form about something that we experience in ourselves. It's like view it as he's just the giant puppet, you know, the one of these I don't know, Buddhist figure of ignorance or greed or stupidity or just yeah, that might help. And I reached a point, and I'm actually very surprised how quickly that arrived. I reached a point that I don't, it's not even that I'm protecting myself from looking at it and watching it, but it feels like it's becoming so absurd. I'm not even interested. It's like it doesn't mean anything. It's just one stupid word after another that just he could say the opposite thing. It just doesn't mean anything. So I just I kind of almost gave up on paying attention to it, you know, and it's really not out of protecting myself from a mental health perspective, but just like why?
I hear you. And it is. It's really like one of those images on a tanka, Tibetan tanka, the black deity with, all the stuff. So what does that say? Because there is a part of it that is in us, we can, like you say, we can recognize aspects of that in ourselves. Yeah, and the bit about, it's one, one thing after another and changing. That's what I mean about the impermanence aspect. It's just like so fast, the current. It's going so fast that, okay, it's important to realize that there's the current. And yet, every last detail of that current, we know enough of it to know what that, what it is, Debbie.
Yeah, thank you, Roshi. This is great. I was thinking about your experience in working with in the refugee center. It reminded me of all kinds of things that happened when I was going to L'un l'autre, the Michel Dubois Association for Distributing Food. I went for several years, actually. And besides all the things that you learn when you've got 600 people who are hungry and you're dishing out food and things have to go fast and people get mad and but we work it out sort of thing. What really struck me in that experience was, and some of us ate with the people who came to get food, and in the end, was that this population of everything, refugees, young and old, kind of Paris clodo or drunks from off the street, anybody and everyone was welcome, became the way I perceived them totally changed after a while. They became citizens of my country, or I can't say members of my family, but if I see someone in the metro who's before this experience would have looked dangerous to me, they're not dangerous to me anymore because I spent 5 years getting to know them, sort of thing. And for me, that was probably the prime takeaway from that experience. Was all of a sudden this whole group of people that I'd always been kind of fearful and mistrustful of, became just people that could be anybody that I knew. So yeah, finding something somewhere close by that helps you to open, helped me to open up in any case. Yeah.
Yep, absolutely. That's how it works, huh? And it makes all the difference then. Like you say, now you don't look at those people who aren't even the same people you were eating with, but you don't look at them in the same way anymore. And we don't look at ourselves in the same way either anymore, I think, which was important. Well, we're just about out of time, so maybe we'll stop there. I remind everyone we have a day of practice on Saturday, and if you're in Paris, you can come. If you're not in Paris, you can join online. Don't hesitate. You can come just for the Dharma talk if you want to. For those who don't join, the study group will be still happening. Joel will be hosting the study group. So.
Yeah, and I've sent the text already. You should have received it.
Thank you.